This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2019, held on March 22 and 23, 2019, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Welcome. So good to have you all here. You know what I love about a small room? It's a lot easier to fill it, right? So thank you for coming. When we talk about basic principles of conflict resolution, probably a lot of things that go through your head. There's not a lot we can cover in 45 minutes, but we're going to try, okay? So these are just some things that I've learned and am learning. I'm a work in progress, I'll admit to you. I'm not old enough to have the experience that many of you do, but these are some things that's just a good reminder for me to teach myself, all right? So this is just a self-study here today. And one of the things that I've learned in conflict resolution is that biblical principles hold the answer to almost any problem, not almost any problem you have. Biblical principles hold the answer. Sometimes I hang up the phone and think, what was I thinking? I blew it on that call. But the Word has the answers. So if we stay connected to the Word, we can handle conflicts in a good way. Conflicts are a part of life. I've just learned that you can't run away from them, or they'll fester, they'll grow, they'll get worse. If we mishandle them, it's even worse, isn't it? Because they can explode in our faces. But we can learn how to handle conflict effectively. We can learn to do our part to handle conflict. Unresolved conflicts are like a moldy tuna casserole in the bottom drawer of your fridge. Any bachelors here today? Any single guys? Raise your hand. Anybody? All right. So you know what happens to celery at the bottom drawer of your fridge, right? The hair gets longer and longer, gets worse and worse, just like this. But I tell you what, if we can handle them effectively using the principles from the Word, we'll have a lot better lives. We'll have a lot better relationships. Winston Churchill once said, never let a good crisis go to waste. It's a tough one, isn't it?
I like it.
Never let a good crisis go to waste. Learn from conflict. Ask God what He wants you to learn from it. Can you guys see? Do you want to maybe hit the lights back there a little bit? Might help a little bit. Here's some facts about workplace conflict. 85% of U.S. employees experience conflict and spend an average of 2.8 hours per week dealing with it. All right, some of you are businessmen. You crunch the numbers. Unhealthy conflict causes significant loss of organizational productivity. In fact, a study by the Harvard Law School found that conflict causes U.S. employers approximately $359 billion paid dollars a year. That adds up, doesn't it? But you know, the real cost of conflict I've found isn't added up in dollars and cents. It's the cost of relationship. It's the cost of what happens to our hearts when we're in the midst of conflict. And it can't be measured in dollars and cents. So I'm going to talk about three basic steps in conflict resolution today. And this is not an exhaustive list, but it's an introductory list, we'll call it. Number one, prepare your own heart. Number two, approach the other party the right way. And number three, be willing to be defrauded. I can assure you, this list was not comprised by the Trial Lawyers Association, okay? This is a very non-resistant peacemaking list. And sometimes our lists, the Bible's lists, are very different. In fact, nearly every time our lists are very different from the world's lists. So prepare your own heart. Preparation is the most important step in a conflict resolution, I believe. Getting your heart right to begin the conflict resolution. Not preparing my own agenda, but preparing my own heart to respond like Jesus would. What would Jesus do? Might sound cliche, but that's so important. What would Jesus do in this situation? In the legal profession, attorneys often engage in manipulation, selfishness, surprise, surprise, even a little dishonesty, right? Maybe you've experienced that. I hope not. But the Christian model of conflict resolution is exactly the opposite, right? It's all about the other party. It's all about what's best for them. It's about non-resistance and peacemaking, and not about jumping up the stack of people to get to the top. We can't control the outcome, but we can control our own attitudes. That's what I'm going to talk about with preparing your own heart. Controlling our own attitudes, doing our part to reach resolution. So how do we prepare our hearts? Here's six easy steps, right? How do you prepare your heart for conflict resolution? Number one, swallow pride. And I'm going to delve into a few of these. I'm just going to hit them quickly here. Swallow pride. Don't compare yourself with others. See it from the other side, from the other point of view. Fear not, judge not, and renew your mind. So swallow your pride. Proverbs 13:10 says, only by pride cometh contention. That's kind of sobering. Only by pride cometh contention. So how many conflicts am I involved in that have a root in pride? It's kind of sobering to me, isn't it? Only by pride cometh contention. It's not about who's right or who's wrong. It's not about who's the expert. You know, sometimes people get in this sort of egotistical conflict with you, don't they? Where it's about who's the expert, who's right. But if they want to be the expert, let them be the expert. They want the letters behind their name, put the letters behind their name. Let them be the expert. If they want to get into a personal competition with you, let them win, right? It's not about personal conflicts. Not personality conflict should never be a reason to get engaged in conflict. Many petty disagreements on a job site are not fundamental disagreements, is another thing I found. Even with clients, many times there's a disagreement. It's not a fundamental conviction disagreement. It's a petty disagreement. And they're personality ego conflicts. They're relationship conflicts. So be humble. Be quick to acknowledge your own mistakes. Don't point the finger. Isn't that so easy when we're engaged in a conflict to just say, well, the other party did this. It was their fault. It wasn't my fault. It was their fault. When your employer gets on you about something and you point the blame. Guess what happens when you become known as a blame pointer, right? As a tale bearer. It starts happening back to you. Pretty soon you have conflict with that fellow employee or that fellow worker. Pride goes before the fall, as this pig found out. Remember, pride goes before the fall. We've heard this before, but for some reason it's so easy to forget. So easy to forget this and let our egos get us into a pride match or a power match with somebody else. Don't compare yourself with others. Here's another part of preparing your heart. Don't compare yourself with others. 1 Corinthians 10 says, they measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves are not wise. What can comparing ourselves to others lead to? This can lead to jealousy, insecurity, all types of strife. And I think of the parable of the talents. If you remember that, right? Where the Lord gave one person 5 talents, gave one person 2 talents, and gave another person 1 talent. And you know what happened, right? The man with 5 doubled his talents to 10. The one with 2 doubled it to 4. And the one with 1, what did he do? He buried it in the sand because he didn't think his 1 talent was good enough. He didn't think his 1 talent measured up to the guy with 5 or the girl with 2. And that's so tragic because the person with the talent didn't give herself or himself the talent, did they? The Lord gave the talent. So why are we comparing ourselves among ourselves when we don't like the talent we've been given? God gave you the talent. God gave her the talent. God gave him the talent. Take what you have and run with it. You know, if he hadn't buried his talent, he could have at least gotten 3.8% interest at Anabaptist Financial, right? Where's Merle Hur at? I'm doing free advertising here for him. But don't bury your talent. Don't compare it with others. If you do that, you'll wind up in all types of problems because of insecurity and jealousy and envy and everything else that stems out of that. Don't bury your talent like this ostrich. Don't bury your talent. Don't compare your talent with others, or you'll end up like him. If God wanted you to be someone else, he would have made you someone else. This is a constant reminder that we all need. If God wanted you to be somebody else, he would have made you somebody else. But he made you unique. He made you special. He has a special plan for you. It doesn't matter how many talents you think you have or you don't have. He's the one who gave it, and he has a purpose for you. Prepare yourself for the possibility that some of your conflict is related to a feeling of inferiority. Now, that might be on their part. It might be on your part. But somebody is probably feeling insecure in many of the conflicts that I've witnessed with clients. Become secure in who God made you to be. This will give you thicker skin, so to speak, right? Personal criticisms, personal attacks, insults, different things that come your way will be much easier to bear if you're secure in who God made you to be. But when we take our eyes off Christ and we start focusing our eyes on other people, that's when we run into conflicts because now we're not looking at him, we're looking at others and what they have and what we don't have. Take what God has given you and run with it. You can counteract inferiority by building others up. You know, people come from all types of backgrounds. I found some people have never had affirmation in their lives. And for some reason, in the Anabaptists, it's really easy to not build each other up. Not sure. Maybe it's a cultural thing, but it's so easy to just kind of let life go on, and we don't build each other up. We don't exhort each other. We don't encourage each other. Some of your coworkers have never been affirmed. Maybe they've been abused. Maybe they had a bad home life. Maybe their father told them they'll never measure up to anything. And so they need a little more. They need a lot more. And just be prepared. Even if you don't struggle with this, maybe your coworker struggles with this. Maybe someone in your ministry struggles with this. Counteract inferiority by building others up. You know, when's the last time you really hated someone or really had a strong conflict with someone who encouraged you a lot? Not very often, is it? The encouraging people are the easiest people to get along with, right? The exhorting people, the exhorters, people with the gift of exhortation, are the people that are so easy to get along with. So if we become those people, we can minimize our conflicts. Here's another one in preparing your heart for conflict resolution. See it from the other side. See it from the other side. Don't just take your point of view. I think of the horse with blinders on it, you know, clopping through the city, not looking left or right, just thinking, I'm on a one track, I'm not turning back. See it from the other side. Philippians says, look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. Wear the other shoe. Walk a mile in their shoes. Don't react to them, right? Don't react to the other party. Try to understand their point of view. Try to be objective. All of us are subjective to some extent, and we can't avoid that, but try to be as unbiased as you can be. Understand that not all situations are black and white. Oh, they seem black and white to us, don't they? But when you think about the other side and the other point of view, it's not black and white. There was a case we had in Harrisonburg, and the guy gave me permission to share it, where a Mennonite young man was chased. Well, let me back up a little bit. Mennonite young man one night got into a car and sped out the driveway and drove down Interstate 81 at a very high rate of speed. And it wasn't long until our faithful Virginia troopers saw him and took up pursuit. And he didn't stop. And he kept going. And by the time it was all over, there was a collection of police cars, and he was arrested and taken into jail. All right, Mennonite young man. Well, you can believe that from the prosecutor's side, from the prosecutor's point of view, this man was guilty, end of story, right? But this was a really good lesson to seeing it from the other side. From our point of view, here's the fact. He was sick. He had an illness. He went to the doctor. They prescribed a medication to him called Levaquin. And I'm not a doctor, but apparently there have been very few cases, but some cases, nonetheless, reported in the U.S. where Levaquin can make you hallucinate, can make you basically lose your mind. And he didn't know it. The doctor that prescribed it didn't know it. But apparently that's what happened to him, because he didn't remember what had gone on. That's pretty scary. A guy driving 90 miles an hour that doesn't remember what's going on. But now we had to convince this prosecutor of this. And the Lord worked, okay? The Lord worked. We got him admitted to actually a mental ward. And the psychologist there, or psychiatrist, whatever you call him, wasn't convinced at first, but eventually came around and gave a report that said, yes, apparently Levaquin is what caused it. But now we had to take that to the prosecutor and get them to agree that this man had no idea what he was doing, right? And so anyway, it was an incredible example of seeing it from the other side. The prosecutor couldn't see our side, we couldn't see her side, and the Lord helped us get the felony dropped. But see it from the other side. It might seem impossible. What, you know, how is it possible you could take a medication, right, and just speed down the highway and not know what you're doing? And from the prosecutor's point of view, she just thought that's impossible. So see it from the other side. There might be more than one right answer to your conflict. Empathize with your adversary's hurts and struggles. Try to understand what is driving their side of the conflict. Show them you care. Show them you care. Here's another one. And I think this is one of the biggest keys to any conflict. One of the biggest causes of any conflict is fear. If you really think about it, Isaiah 41 says, fear thou not, for I am with thee. But we fear embarrassment. There's all kinds of things you could fear. Embarrassment, financial ruin, financial failure, your business failing, your ministry failing. You fear the future. We fear what we can't control. Wait a minute. We fear what we can't control. Can you control anything? Are you in control of anything? We've never been in control. So why do we fear what we can't control? We can't control anything, right? God's in control of it all. And so any fear we have is not of God. Fear is not of God. Fear is a liar. And God knows the plans he has for you. God will work all things together for your good. These are verses, right, that we all know. And if God wants you to have it, he'll give it to you. God wants you to have it, he'll give it to you. You don't need to fight your brother to keep it. You don't have to fight your brother to get it. God will never say punch your brother in the nose to get something. He wants you to have it, he'll give it to you. You've never been in control in the first place. I've never been in control in the first place. So just be aware that fear can cause major conflict because we feel like we're out of control. So we feel like we need to be in control. And then we get into a power struggle with the person next to us because we're trying to grab that control that we've never had in the first place. Now, the telephone is sort of an interesting picture for me because I don't know how many of you are married, probably a majority of you, I'm guessing. How many of you remember the phone call or the conversation to your father-in-law about courting your wife? Raise your hand. All right, a few of you. How many didn't call your father-in-law? I'm just kidding. Well, I had never met him before, and I remember it very vividly. And I lived at home at the time, and we didn't have very good cell phone reception at my house. And beyond that, I would never have had the phone conversation in the house because of my six siblings who might have listened in. That would have been disastrous, wouldn't it have been? So I got in my car and I drove to the end of our driveway where we had better cell phone reception. And true story, I sat at the end of this driveway with my cell phone in my hand and quoted Psalm 23 trying to work up the nerve to push that dial. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not. I can't do this. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures, right? And you push the send button, and you've never thought there's 5 minutes in between rings before, right? But it just feels that way. It rings, and then there's silence, and then it rings, and then there's silence. But he answered, and he said, yes, so that's all that matters. Less than a year later, we were married. Okay, so it all worked out. But fear not. All right, here's another one. Judge not. Matthew 7 says, judge not that you be not judged. We all know these verses, right? Why are you picking out the speck of dirt in your brother's eye when you've got a log in your own? And that hits me between the eyes, doesn't it? Why are we trying to pick out and nitpick at others when we've got issues in our own lives? And society's abused this verse so much about being judges. We can't be judgmental. Judge not. Don't let them rob this verse. This verse is way too good to let them rob this verse of its meaning. The principle is still true. Don't let them rob it. Don't look down on others. Be self-aware. Be self-aware. Be humble. Don't view yourself, like we heard in one of the past sessions, don't view yourself more highly than you should. Be self-aware of the beams in our own eyes. Isaiah 64 says, we're all as an unclean thing. All of our righteousness on our best day is as filthy rags. We're no better than the other party. And what I found in conflict with clients in various situations, if you walk into a room with a judgmental attitude or a self-righteous attitude or a critical attitude, they'll shut down before you ever get started, won't they? Because they think, well, you're no better than me, and the attitude precedes you. So as you're preparing for conflict resolution, try to get the judgmental, self-righteous, whatever it is, chips on our shoulders, try to get them off in advance and go in humbly. Judge not. And here's the final step in preparing your heart. Renew your mind. We heard about this as well in several sessions. Renew your mind. Romans 12. Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. So how can we avoid being conformed to the world? By being transformed. It doesn't happen automatically. We have to be transformed by the renewing of our minds. That's the only way we'll be able to carry out the good, the acceptable, the perfect will of God. That's the only way we'll have the right attitude during a conflict. Even if we don't look like the world, do we think like the world? In terms of money, in terms of business, in terms of climbing the ladder? And it's so easy in whatever we're doing to get caught up in the secular mindset of climbing over people, climbing the ladder, getting to the top at all costs, regardless of what it does to your brother. And that can cause all kinds of issues in conflicts. We try to take advantage of other people. Or if not that, we're way too concerned about someone taking advantage of us. Boy, that person took advantage of me, right? He took my money. Well, it's never been your money, right? It's never been my money. So renew your mind to keep those cobwebs out of your mind, those cobwebs that can so easily infiltrate us if we don't keep a good relationship with the Lord going. We need nonconformity in our minds, in our worldviews, in the way we handle conflict. We need daily renewal. The thing that I found is nearly every morning the devil will be right there to serve you breakfast. Not breakfast of sausage and eggs, right? But breakfast of fear and stress and temptation and worry. And if you're going through a conflict, the first thing you think about when you pop open your eyes is this conflict. What am I going to do about it? Wonder what that party's thinking today, right? And it makes you worry. Maybe it's a case you're thinking about. Well, this client's doing that to this client. Wonder what's going to happen. How do we counteract that? Got to get up out of bed on the right side. Got to get out on the right side, not the wrong side like this guy. Don't even think about trying to get up in the morning without having a meaningful devotion. And I learned this the hard way. Still learning this. Every morning, if the first thing you do is put your mind on Christ and spend a meaningful time in devotions and prayer, it'll help your day go a lot better. Another thing that I heard from a speaker a few days ago was think about three things the next day. Before you go to bed, the last thing you think about at night, think about three things that you're looking forward to, positive things, things that are going to go good tomorrow, not the 10 worst things that could happen, not the 10 things you have to do tomorrow, right, or the boat will sink. Your mind actually continues running during the night, even while you're sleeping, and it meditates on the things you last thought about before you went to bed. So that program is going to keep running. You really want it running on negativity. And that's just a challenge to me, is going to bed with the right attitude, with the right mentality. None of us are strong enough to handle conflict alone, but because of Christ, we'll never have to walk alone. So let's walk with Him. Let's let Him carry us. All right, so now you've prepared your heart. You've done all the right things. You're not judging. You're not fearing. You're seeing it from the other side. You've done all the above. You're not comparing yourself with others. Now we're getting ready to approach the other party the right way. And there's a right way and a wrong way. We all know that, right? It's a right way to approach the other party. Here are some biblical ways to approaching the other party. Cast out anger. Avoid gossip. Agree with your adversary quickly. Bless them that curse you. Give a soft answer. And don't answer a matter before you hear it. Psalm 37 says, cease from anger. How many times have you gotten that phone call where someone's just enraged? There was a case not too long ago where the other attorney picked up the phone and called me. And before I barely got a word in edgewise, he was on a tear. We're going to court, and your client's crazy, and if you don't, you better figure out your plan because we're going to file a lawsuit, and what's your plan? Let me know. And on and on and on. And thank the Lord in that case, He gave me grace, and I was able to just sort of calm down and just acknowledge, okay, there's some problems. Yes, my client has some problems, but your client has some problems too. You and I, as the attorneys, have an opportunity to be the adults in the room, don't we? The clients are acting like children, so we can be the adults in the room. All right? So let's be the adults in the room. Let's bring these parties together. It was like a $3,000 case, and no one would have won by going to court. He would have spent way more legal fees if he had taken us to court than $3,000. But it got into this personality ego conflict, and the lawyer was jumping on board. But thank the Lord we settled, and that was it. But it's so easy when someone tears into us to just flare up, right? Because of the mirror, they call them mirror neurons in our brains, where what they do, we do. So they get enraged, we get enraged. And the reverse is true, too. So if you pick up the phone and launch into somebody, what are your chances of getting a good resolution? Because they're just going to respond to what you said to them, right? Well, you're angry, so I'm angry. And these tensions just flare. So cast out anger. Don't go in guns blazing. Here's the other thing that may be even more pertinent for the Anabaptists. You might think, well, I've never blown up at somebody. I've never screamed and yelled at somebody. But how about the silent treatment? Right? How about the silent treatment? I can struggle with that. Just this silent, maybe in our marriage, right? Maybe in our home, maybe in our church. It's so easy to just kind of be a little bit upset and silent about it. But that silent rage can be just as devastating as a blow-up, can't it? Because they can sense that attitude. So cast out anger. Here's another one, avoid gossip. And Brian Martin talked about this earlier. It was excellent. Matthew 18 says, go to the other party directly. Go to the other party directly. Work it out between the two of you. There's few things more detrimental in a conflict than sowing discord, right? And that's one of the things the Lord hates. There's a list of things that He hates. That's one of them. He that sows discord among his brethren. So don't gossip. Don't go to your coworkers and tell them all about it. Don't talk behind your adversary's back, because what goes around comes around. And what happens is when you go to sit in that meeting with your adversary, he's going to have heard about it. He's going to know that you've been around talking and campaigning or politicizing, right? And it's going to be way harder to actually win that brother back if he knows you've already told the whole world about it. And now you're here to make peace, right? Just keep that in mind. Avoid gossip. Agree with your adversary quickly. Matthew 5 says, agree with your adversary quickly. And it goes on about, because if you don't, you can be delivered to the judge, who will deliver you to the jailer, who will deliver you to prison. So it goes from bad to worse. And you can see the landslide there quickly. So agree with your adversary quickly. There may only be, and this is true very often in a case, maybe even a lawsuit that you're facing. You might only have a little window of time, especially before it's actually filed, to go over to that neighbor, over that fence dispute or that construction company where you've got an unhappy customer. There may only be a small sliver or window of time to agree with your adversary. And when that window closed, it's often shut. You know, the way the world does things with divorce and all types of things like that I don't get involved in, but the way the world does divorce, it's all about me. And it's all about running to court. And what happens is, with every filing that gets filed, it feels like it just gets more and more personal. And there's less and less chance to agree. Even if it's in no one's best interest to continue the conflict, it becomes so personal, they just can't endure the thought of agreeing. But if you go first and you say, let's agree. While we have this sliver of time, let's agree. I don't care if it costs me something, let's agree. You have a lot better chance of resolving that. And this not only works in the legal profession, it works in ministry, it works in church, it works in business. There's many areas this works. Look for common ground. Emphasize the points of agreement rather than highlighting the points of disagreement. Take personal responsibility for the part you have in it. You might only think, hey, I'm 5% at fault. Take personal responsibility for the part you are at fault and agree with your adversary quickly. This can work. Here's another point in approaching the other party. Bless them that curse you. Bless them that curse you. Matthew 5 is familiar here from the Sermon on the Mount. If any man sues thee at the law and takes away your coat, let him have your cloak also. Boy, that's a tough one, isn't it? Wow. If he sues you and takes your coat, give him extra. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. Don't repay evil with evil. Go the second mile in making restitution. Do all you can to get there. Love your enemies. Bless them that curse you. Die to self. If we were to summarize that passage in one phrase, it'd be die to self. This is not our natural instinct. It's certainly not my natural instinct, but it is the way of Jesus. It's the way of peace. It's the way to solve conflict. As we take self out of it. And if I only love those who love me, what have I accomplished? Well, I really love the people that love me, right? What accomplishment is that? That's nothing, because it's natural to love the people that love us. But when you love the people that are cursing you, that's when you've accomplished something. And I certainly haven't gotten there. But this is the challenge. Love those who are unlovely. And remember, it takes two to make a fight. That's one of those timeless principles that your grandmother probably told you. But it's true. It takes two to make a fight. One guy out there punching is just swinging at air if there's no one to fight with, right? Looks pretty crazy. It takes two to make a fight. Refuse to fight. Refuse to roll around in the mud. Take the high road. How can you hit somebody who doesn't hit back? It's very hard to fight with somebody in that way. And I'm not talking just physical fighting. In fact, almost never physical fighting in the Anabaptists. But it could be words. It could be attitudes. It could be actions. It could be passive-aggressive. Whoa, passive-aggressive, right? How about those emails? Boy, those emails can be loaded. Ever send an email to someone who you'd never say that to their face? It's pretty easy, isn't it? We can say something in an email we'd never say to their face. So just avoid that. Refuse to fight. And don't just walk away. Affirmatively bless the other party. Use all that energy and adrenaline to do something productive. You know, if we turned all that energy, all that heated conflict that gets so stirred up into positive energy, boy, our ministries would be loaded and rolling, wouldn't they? Because we've got all that adrenaline, all that pent-up desire. We can just put that into positive energy, into doing what the Lord wants us to do, and we can thrive. Isaiah 2 says, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares. Beat those swords into plowshares. Don't fight your brother with it. Put it into a plow. Get productive with it. Use that adrenaline to advance the kingdom. Here's a soft answer turns away wrath. And this goes so perfectly with all the other principles Jesus taught. But a soft answer turns away wrath. We've already talked about some mirror neurons. But when someone comes at you and charges at you with a high tenor voice, let's say, Our tendency is just to mimic that back. But give a soft answer. Just try it. Just for exercise. Just for fun. Next time someone yells at you, respond softly. Be amazed at the way the balloon just deflates, right? The air just comes out of the room, and it can be resolved so much easier if a soft answer turns away wrath. And if you're in the middle of a negotiation or mediation or just one-on-one with somebody you have a conflict with, just think about the fact that if he gets upset or she gets upset, we can always call timeout, right? Call a 5 loaves and 2 fishes timeout, I call it, and just go take a break. Just let everything calm down, then come back and reconvene. Sometimes you need to have another meeting. Maybe that meeting has reached its potential. You need another meeting later. Don't feel like you have to get everything done at once. But if things start getting escalated, de-escalate. That's incredibly hard, I've found, to practice. Their blood pressure starts rising. Ours does too. So you have to actively counteract that. The natural instinct is for your blood pressure to rise. You have to proactively counteract that. People raise their voices, we raise ours. And soon the conflict is escalated out of control. Here's another big one. Don't answer a matter before you hear it. Proverbs 18 says it's a folly and a shame to answer a matter before you hear it. And translated, I just say that means don't jump to conclusions. It's so easy to jump to conclusions, especially if your conflict is based on text or email or something that you could misread. We can jump to conclusions so fast. Be sure you understand, whether you're a third party, maybe you're a manager working out a dispute between mission workers or employees, or whether you're in it yourself, don't jump to conclusions. Don't assume the worst. It's so easy when trust breaks down to assume the worst about the other party. I'm just assuming that this is what he meant when he said that. I'm just assuming that this is their attitude. Don't jump to conclusions. Listen to both sides, especially if you're trying to mediate something. Listen to both sides. And if it's just you and him or her, listen to her side. Listen to what they have to say. Make sure you understand their side before you proceed. And often when you listen, when you truly listen, I found you identify the root cause of the dispute. Sometimes you have to read between the lines to find out what's actually going on. It could be a marriage problem. It could be a financial problem. It could be insecurity, guilt, depression. It could be all kinds of things. But don't fight the symptoms and ignore the underlying disease. So often it's easy to just react to what they're doing, reacting to their actions. But don't fight the action. Try to get to the underlying root cause. And the only way to do that is to really listen. Really listen with your ears open to the matter before responding. All right. Now you've got it all figured out. You've prepared your heart. You've approached the other party the right way. Now what happens if you can't actually get to yes? What happens if you don't get the result you wanted? You've done everything right, but you can't get the result you wanted. 1 Corinthians 6 says, be willing to be defrauded. That's a hard one. That's a very hard one for me to swallow. Be willing to be defrauded. There's utterly a fault among you, it says, because you go to law one with another. Why do you not rather take wrong? Why do you not rather suffer yourselves to be defrauded? You know, this whole concept of suing our brother has actually infiltrated the church. There was another Mennonite case in Harrisonburg where Mennonites were literally taking each other to court over a family dispute. The Protestants obviously have this problem too. The Gospel for Asia case. You guys familiar with the Gospel for Asia case a little bit? They actually just reached, at least in principle, a settlement recently for $37 million to settle a class action lawsuit brought about by a supposed Christian donor and his class of other donors because they didn't like the way Gospel for Asia was supposedly spending or not spending their money. Now, I can't tell you much about Gospel for Asia because I don't know a whole lot about Gospel for Asia. I can tell you this. Based on 1 Corinthians 6, it is wrong to sue your brother. I'm just going to say that, all right? I'm not ashamed. It is wrong to sue your brother. Even if they did something wrong, it's flat out wrong to take your brother to court. Don't let that mentality infiltrate your lives. And it's just sort of a fun fact. The CPA firm, that's the independent outside accounting firm for Gospel for Asia, several of their representatives are actually here at Reach this year, and I talked to them over lunch today, and they just said, what you hear in the media versus the reality is totally different. Gospel for Asia isn't guilty of half the things that the donor class try to claim they were, but with an aggressive attorney and a lot of media coverage, they got $37 million. So that's maybe the worst case scenario, but just remember this verse. If you're thinking about suing your brother, all right, just remember this verse for a second. It's a good reminder. Arbitration agreements, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that, but An arbitration agreement is something you can put into your contracts as a business and as a ministry. You can put an arbitration agreement into your contract, into your agreement, in order to prevent a lawsuit. What is an arbitration agreement? Very simply put, it says that both parties, neither party, will litigate against one another. We agree we're not going to litigate against each other for any reason. If we have a dispute we can't work out through just informal methods, we're going to put an arbitration panel together. There's different ways you can do it. If you're working ministry to ministry or Anabaptist to Anabaptist, I definitely recommend just using Anabaptist ministers or accountants or someone you trust. You can have a panel of three, you can use one, you can use five, whatever you agree on. But you can literally have a team of ministers rendering a binding legal decision in your dispute. To where if one party wants to be cantankerous, wants to take you to court, the judge is going to look at that and say, well, you agreed to arbitration, binding arbitration, the ministers decided it, and that's the end of it. How much better is that than dragging each other through the public media and the public court system for years and years? So think about arbitration agreements. They can be very helpful. And even if it's not between Anabaptists, there are many different, there's actually the American Arbitration Association. I don't recommend them at all, but that is one resort you could use as opposed to the court system. The court system is the last resort, in my opinion, that you want to use. Sometimes losing is winning. If your principles never cost you something, you should probably reevaluate your principles. And that's a scary one, right? If your principles never cost you something, you better reevaluate your principles, because at some point in life, they will cost you something. And sometimes we have to make the tough decisions. Sometimes employees need to be terminated. Sometimes God's moving your ministry in another direction. Sometimes hard actions do need to be taken. But often the conflict requires some surrender on your part. It's going to cost you something. Be willing to be defrauded. If you're willing to lay down your agenda, peace can be achieved. Selfishness is such a key part of so many conflicts. And conflict's nearly always rooted in a dispute over what I want versus what you want. And here's a challenge that I've often thought. What would happen if I just took the I out of the equation? If I just took what I want out, how much easier is it to reach that conclusion? How much easier is it to get to that resolution? If I just took I out of it? Because it's usually about me versus you, right? What I want versus what you want. Ask yourself, is this a hill worth dying on? Is this a hill worth dying on? Is this small, petty issue right here, right now, that we're fighting on in the mission field or where, or business or wherever you are, is this a hill worth dying on? Is this worth splitting the church over? Is this worth splitting the ministry over? Is this issue right here really worth our testimony, our relationship? Is it a fundamental disagreement where you've got a conviction and it really needs to be stood upon, or is it based on preference? What I want versus what you want. Mark 8 says, what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Be willing to give it up if that is what God wants you to do. Part of that being willing to be defrauded is avoiding power struggles. And this can happen on a board. It can happen in a partnership. It can happen in a business. Many different ways it can happen is people getting engaged in power struggles. I've seen it on a board before where it felt like they were disagreeing over mashed potatoes. It wasn't literally mashed potatoes, but things about that insignificant. Well, I want to have mashed potatoes. Well, I'd rather have scalloped potatoes. And well, I'd rather have, you know. And it really wasn't about mashed potatoes at all. It was about who got the choice, who was able to decide whether it was mashed potatoes or scalloped potatoes. And that's a huge conflict because it's, well, I'm the chairman of the board, and well, I'm the vice chairman of the board, and I'd rather have scalloped potatoes. And it just becomes this power struggle. Avoid it. Avoid the power struggle. God will give you what he wants you to have. And again, we hit this earlier, you won't have to fight your brother to get what God wants you to have. Try to avoid that power struggle. Be willing to be defrauded. Hebrews 10 says, you endured a great fight of afflictions, for you took joyfully the spoiling of your goods, knowing in yourselves that ye have in heaven a better and an enduring substance. So how could those early Christians back in Paul's day take joyfully the spoiling of their goods? And the only conclusion I have is they had an eternal worldview. They had mental nonconformity. They lived life with an open hand. And they didn't view money or power as their own. They were just stewards of what God gave them. That's the only way you can take joyfully the spoiling of your goods. It's the only way you can allow yourself willingly to be defrauded. Because it's not the natural instinct, is it? It's not my natural instinct. And it's just a challenge for me every time I read that verse. boy, they took joyfully the spoiling of their goods. They didn't take it begrudgingly. They didn't just accept it. They took it joyfully. In a marriage, both parties give up a little for the sake of the team. In a ministry, everyone gives up a little for the sake of the team. You know, I think we need to apply our marriage principles to our businesses and our ministries, don't we? The Anabaptist marriage rate is absolutely incredible. The divorce rate is so low, it might be 1% in the Anabaptist. You step outside that church, and you've probably got 50% or more of marriages that break down, including in the, quote, Christian church. So our marriages are incredible, at least in terms of staying together. They might not always be incredible marriages, but they're at least staying together. So why don't we apply some of those marriage principles to our businesses? In a marriage, you go into it committed, don't you? You go in, this is my partner for life. We're going to make this work. In a marriage, you give up something. You're willing to give up. You're willing to compromise. Maybe you squeeze a toothpaste at the end, she squeezes in the middle. You're going to get past that, aren't you? But why is it in our ministries, in our churches, in our businesses, well, no, he squeezed the toothpaste in the middle. Can't get along with that guy, right? But in a marriage, we'll give it up. So why are we applying a different standard in our marriages to make those work, because they're working really well, versus the business or the ministry? So give up a little. Be willing to compromise and meet in the middle where you can. People come from different backgrounds, different families, different states, different jobs, different churches, different ages, personalities, you name it. Everybody's different. You're unique, right? We're all unique. Be prepared for the reality. You're not going to see things exactly the same way. You might have been raised in a totally different environment than the other party. Be prepared for the differences and try to meet in the middle. So just a few points. I got about 3 minutes. Forming agreements when coming to a resolution. Now that you've done all the steps, when you're trying to put nuts and bolts to paper, when you're coming to a resolution, don't attack the other party's character. Don't get engaged in personal attacks. Don't show shock. Oh, I can't believe you would ask that of me, right? Don't show shock at what's asked of you. Be open, be honest, be sincere. And here's a little nugget. If you expect very little from the other party, they'll rarely disappoint you, won't they? If you expect very little from them, they won't disappoint you. Focus on what you can do to reach agreement. Do all you can and leave the result to the Lord. Remember that 100 years from now, material things aren't going to matter. Material things aren't going to matter. But how you handled conflict will matter for eternity. Thank you very much for letting me share with you. I feel like I'm just a young novice compared to many of you with wisdom, but thank you for this opportunity and thank you for being here. I appreciate it.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.